Pixel Dreams is back with all new high-resolution 2.5D graphics,
no way.
Digital joystick control, fully up-resed and retextured maps,
what?
And it's all 1080p HDTV compatible.
Holy!
Buy it on your local internet download service for only $19.99.
That's a steal, dude.
Relive the glory days with Drew Zimmerman and Eric Grubeck like you never had before. Act now and we'll include not one, but three downloadable content packs featuring the Pixel Dreams crew in Spanish,
El Supera Metroid,
Russian,
Zola Paraspa Kamra,
and Swahili. Act now before this offer goes away and get totally retro.
Well. It looks like Pixel Dreams is back.
We're back. I mean, it's been how long?
2 months.
2 months?
It's been 2 months, and you know what? We're calling this episode Pixel Dreams Reshelled, because this is the next generation of Pixel Dreams. This ain't your daddy's podcast.
Yeah. Forget about your grandpappy's Pixel Dreams.
This is the new fandangled.
Right.
Download content, blah, 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 upgraded graphics,
you know. Forget bleeps and bloops, it's all about baubles and shiny new up-res sprites. No, wait, no,
blah,
not
blah,
sprites.
Blah, 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 blah.
Wait, sprites, that's a dirty word,
it is.
Sorry.
No, if you haven't surmised yet, this episode is about the current state of retro games. You know, the remakes, the ports, you know, the sequels.
We're getting philosophical on you.
Yeah, it's a little bit more of a philosophical, big question episode.
You may have thought these last 2 months were because of a succession of technical problems mishaps. But no, we were sequestered away somewhere deep within the fortress of Pixel Solitude.
With only Kafka books and cocaine papers by Sigmund Freud.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we had to read. And we started asking ourselves the big questions. Like, how old is retro?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to port or not to port? These are just a few of the
examples.
Or
even how worthwhile is it that we're talking about this stuff?
Yeah. Is it really that cool to talk about games you play as a kid? Is it really that relevant?
And do we really need retro games today? Can't we just throw them on the dustbin of history and move on?
All right, well, let's not alienate our base too much.
Okay, well, so we can't alienate you too much, so let's get into something you really like, us bitching about somebody fucking up an old property that we enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Rocket Knight.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Xbox 360 Live Arcade.
Mm-hmm.
Rocket Knight just debuted this week, I'm pretty sure. Uh-huh. Maybe last week, but I'm pretty sure it's this week, and it is not a remake so much as it is a new game using the old property.
It's a reimagining.
It's Rocket Knight for the kids of today.
Right.
No.
We need to package Sparkster for all those young whippersnappers.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what that entails is Konami licensing Rocket Knight out to a third-party developer and them basically taking a few things from the Genesis version of Sparkster and then updating it with shiny new 2.5D graphics, blah, blah, blah. It's not very fun, in my opinion.
It kind of reminds me of a Sonic game, almost. Just as you have, you know, the Dark Rocket Knight, they need to band together to defeat the common enemy.
Which, none of that BS was in the old Rocket Knights. It was all, you know, pretty straightforward. This guy's evil, you gotta fight him.
Mm-hmm.
He was sort of like a Boba Fett type of guy, but now he's, you know, Shadow Sonic. I'm sure he'll have a gun soon, if he doesn't already.
Yes.
But, to get into the game itself, just like the old Rocket Knight, it's got the, you know, classic platforming, using your rocket pack, and it also has the shooting sections that the old Rocket Knight did, like a shmup style, kind of Gradius style.
Not really the highlights of the games.
No, I mean, I don't know, this game is just very disappointing to me in general, and we're going to talk about this a lot on the show. Developers missing the point with retro games. I mean, I don't know who exactly they're trying to market this game to. Is it kids?
It is kids.
Is it old gamers?
Oh, no, it's absolutely kids.
Well,
they've pretty much forsaken the nostalgia of the game. This is just a new game, a new platformer, based on the Rocket Knight franchise. That's all it is. It's a, you know, it's just like Ratchet and Clank. I mean, it's the same type of pandering.
Right, but
although Ratchet and Clank is like a better version, a better example, I should say, of a new platform.
Well, we're more talking about the aesthetics of it. Like, it's very like bright and colorful and like. Like the voices that they have,
the anime kitty. People.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, I don't know. I don't like when they take a property like that and kidify it. Even if it might have been intended for kids in the beginning, at least it wasn't so, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like you said, pandering and just.
That's a good point, though. You know, I mean, obviously, Rocket Knight, when it first came out, it was, you know, it kind of was stuck in that current of the, you know, platforming games of yore. The games that would take any, you know, character with Tude.
Right.
You know, like any animal, you know, fucking Boogerman or I'm trying to think of some of the better ones. Obviously, we have Bubsy.
Course, yeah. Arrow the Acrobat.
Just, you know, all these, you know, cartoon
Zero
characters.
The Kamikaze Squirrel.
Characters with attitude, you know, cool weapons. They would fight
I could go on all day about the Tude mascot, and we've talked a little bit about that before. But yeah, I don't know, Rocket Knight. It's just the game itself. I don't even care so much about. I mean, yeah, the aesthetics and everything are unwelcome to me, and I would much prefer it to look like the original. But the gameplay itself is just very generic, and it's obvious that they didn't put much effort forward to it. It's just it's generic,
and it's very easy too.
And you know, this is coming from Konami, who released Contra 4 on DS, which was an amazing game, an awesome just reimagining of Contra in general, like exactly what Rocket Knight should be right now, but it's not.
Right.
And I don't know, we've only played the demo and it just didn't impress me very much. Maybe the game itself is better, but I don't feel that it will be or that it is. And I'm just very disappointed because Rocket Knight was one of my favorite obscure franchises for the Genesis. And this new game is just a letdown in every way.
The legacy. It just perverts the legacy. All right, well, moving on. We should preface by saying that this is a little bit of a, you know, more compact, you know, it's a shorter episode because we're still, you know, we're trying to come back. We're trying to get our bearings. So this is probably going to be, you know, maybe about a half an hour, 40 minutes. So forgive us if we kind of breeze through these news bits here.
Right.
But moving on, we talked a little bit about Microsoft Game Room in one of the last episodes. And we finally got a chance to immerse ourselves in the game room.
If you will.
Yeah. You know what? I got to say, not what I expect.
Yeah, I don't know. Game Room, I don't think I want to immerse myself much more in it. That's just, again, like Rocket Knight, a big letdown. When we first talked about it, you know, like I said, I was willing to give it a chance. I was willing to see what it would provide. But so far, all it's provided are Atari 2600 games
and television
games, some coin-op games that are basically just like those, and they're emulated very lazily. It's very it suffers from the same problems that you would have with, you know, playing these on emulation on your computer. Like, you load up an Intellivision game and you're not really sure how to control it. You're not really sure how to even maybe start the game.
Well, it actually, it does have the overlays. When you play an Intellivision game, you know, the little cell phone comes up.
Right.
And it has an overlay over it. But the thing is, I don't have one of these big, fancy HDTVs, so the text to me is so small that I still have no idea what the hell is going on. So,
well, you know, I'm sorry, but when they made, you know, Atari games and all these, and television games and stuff, they weren't designed for people that had 50-inch TVs, so I don't feel that you should need a 50-inch TV to play them now.
Yeah.
Kind of defeats the entire point of Game Room, which is trying to market towards older gamers that have remembered these games from their childhood.
And that's the thing.
Teenage years and whatnot.
This really is marketed to older gamers. Like,
it
we're
is.
Talking the 30-plus
oh, yeah.
set.
It's whole hog marketed towards older gamers. I mean, you have the arcade art on the sides, you know, the overlays and everything that look just like the original arcade art. You have the actual arcade that you can walk around in and look at and hear all the sounds that you would hear in the arcades back then.
Right, and most of the games, like, there is no game that is later than 1985.
Right.
I think.
Yeah, but it looks like it's probably not going to change anytime soon.
No, most of these games are from, you know, 1979 to 1984. We're talking, you know, games like combat and basketball and skiing,
right,
or whatever.
I mean,
that
this is like
called.
This is like Nintendo announcing Virtual Console and making a big deal about it, hyping it up. It happens, and then their first, you know, releases are like golf, you know, or like 10-yard fight or something like that, and then they don't release anything else after that. Like, that's all you get.
Yeah, and the thing is, Game Room kind of fell off the boat, too. It kind of fell apart. Most of the people who were working with it have apparently been laid off,
mm-hmm.
and I think they have 3 game packs, which are about, you know, 7 to 10 games. So we have roughly about 30 games in the Game Room. Some of them are, I guess, you know, the more predictable, I guess you could say, Pitfalls, Centipede, Millipede.
Yeah.
We have all the classics, except for, you know, curiously, Pac-Man, Tetris, Crystal Castles is featured,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it's a lot, we'll give them that, it's a little bit of a more obscure set of games.
Right, there's a nice selection for what's there, but, I don't know, Game Room to me, like, the whole thing, I had reservations about from the beginning. I just feel like it was a great idea done very wrong.
It definitely still has some potential, but
yeah,
they also said that I think they were going to release 7 games a week.
Mm-hmm.
They have fallen way short of that.
And honestly, when you're talking about the games that they're releasing right now, you gotta release 7 games a week, because these games are freaking old, and I mean, they might be classics, but you can't play any of these games for longer than, like, 10 minutes anymore.
Yeah.
You just can't.
Well,
they're,
and there's also
too simple.
There's a generational divide. We're obviously a little younger than maybe the market, the demographic,
right,
that these people are trying to reach out to, but I have to agree. You know, just trying to play, like, you know, basketball, for example.
Uh-huh.
Oh my god, that, or adventure.
Right.
Adventure. Last night we were trying to play this for a little bit, and my girlfriend was there.
Uh-huh.
And we were playing Adventure. We were kind of explaining to her what it is. It's a predecessor to the modern day RPG,
uh-huh.
and she just couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
You guide this little square around and try and find some purple brackets
to
defeat the dragon.
It's not an exaggeration at all to say, when you look at these games and compare them to what we're playing now, they look like cave paintings.
They really are
cave paintings. They're the most primitive example of the technology we use today. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad, but you just can't play any of them. I'm sorry, but I grew up with Atari. I grew up with Intellivision. I can't play any of those games for longer than 5 to 10 minutes at this point.
I can hear the typing of the hate mail coming.
It's just the fact of life that what we consider mini games now were full games back then.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it has a lot of potential, but for now,
right,
pretty disappointing.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that I'm disappointed in the games themselves or anything. It's just I'm disappointed in everything involving Game Room. It should be a lot more than it is.
And the presentation, you know, for what they're trying to do, make it kind of like a hybrid, interactive, social
gaming
network.
They tried to make it sound like it was going to be Virtual Console for coin-op arcade, and it's not. If Virtual Console only had, like, 30 NES games on it, that would be what Game Room is right now.
Nintendo
promised a lot more with Virtual Console, and they've delivered at least somewhat. Game Room hasn't delivered at all, and now it looks like it may never because of all these problems it's going through.
We bitch a lot about Virtual Console, but compared to Game Room, Virtual Console
is worlds away.
Farther ahead, especially the Japanese Virtual
Console.
Of course.
But, I mean, Nintendo, disappointingly enough, is really the only company putting any effort right now in this regard, releasing their old retro games for new audiences and doing it in a way where the presentation, everything is fairly good.
Yeah.
Sega maybe deserves some points for some of their collections that they've been doing, but I mean, Sega kind of has to rely on that right now. So,
yeah. Well, moving on, we talked a little bit about Mega Man 10 in our Mega Man centric episode,
mm-hmm.
which I think was episode 6, but we finally got a chance to play it all the way through, and just wanted to give a quick little update on what our impressions were. It's old news by now, I'm sure you've all played it. But I would have to say that I think Mega Man 10 is definitely a notable entry in the series. It's not the best game, but in terms of presentation, retro purism, I guess you could say, And just even the music, just listen to the music, and it just screams NES. Right. It just harkens back to that day.
And, you know, the music itself, I at first didn't like when I heard, because I was, you know, I'm a huge Mega Man fan, so anytime I hear news of a new Mega Man game, especially something like Mega Man 10 that caters to everything I love about Mega Man, I'm going to be very interested, and I looked up the songs and listened to them before I even played the game, and I gotta admit, at first I didn't really like a lot of them, but after I played the game and heard the soundtrack while I was playing the game...
Heard the songs in context.
Right. I really like the soundtrack. It's a great soundtrack, and it just goes to show how integral music is to Mega Man.
Right. Well, I have to agree. I think, in you know, the gameplay itself is also pretty good. Yeah. I do still regret that they did not include the slide with Mega Man. You can use it with Proto Man.
I want to say Mega Man 10, the reason that I even wanted to bring it up is because I see it as a counterpoint to what we just mentioned, whereas those games did everything, or Game Room does things everything wrong, pretty much. Rocket Knight does most wrong. Mega Man 10 does a lot right. And it's the same kind of concept, catering towards retro and trying to, you know, take retro concepts and present them to modern and classic players.
Yeah.
And it does it great with flying colors, whereas those two don't. The only thing I have about Mega Man 10 that I don't like is the fact that Mega Man is gimped himself.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't have slide, he doesn't have charge, so playing as Proto Man is a lot more fun most of the time.
It is. And the difficulty level, it's definitely not as difficult as Mega Man 9 at all.
No.
Definitely not as difficult. And I appreciate that. You know, a lot of people were bitching about how there's an easy mode.
I feel like the game, the difficulty in Mega Man 10 is a lot more balanced.
Right. I would overall have to say so.
And like I said, it's obvious that they tried to cater a little bit more towards modern gamers with 10. They're not sticking precisely to the retro format, because you can change your weapons on the fly and things of that sort. There's like the challenge mode,
which is also a welcome addition.
Right, it is.
But overall, Mega Man 10, I'd say pick it up.
And I say anytime any developer wants to recreate a retro franchise or, you know, bring it up from the dead, please look at the Mega Man 9 and 10 as an example of how to do it right.
It's a template.
Yes.
For all you would-be retro developers out there.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to bring it into even more modern terms, Bayonet Commando Rearmed. Basically what I'm saying is Capcom is making the grade right now in this subject, whereas a lot of the other companies aren't.
So, moving on, there have been a few virtual console games that have been released in our absence.
Let's go to something a little bit more appealing, maybe, than the Game Room and Rocket Knight.
A little bit more positive.
Right.
These are just going to be, you know, quick little reviews of the virtual console games that have been released in our absence.
Which is fine, because a lot of these games we've either touched on or...
Yeah, and I'm assuming that most people have probably played at least one of these games.
Yes.
First off, though, we have Kirby Superstar, which is the latest virtual console release.
And this might be one that you didn't play, because it came out late in the Super Nintendo's lifespan, I believe 1995.
Right.
and around Yoshi's Island time. It was one of the last Super Nintendo games I can remember playing, one of the last new releases, I should say, that I can remember playing. And it contains 8 mini-games, actually, in one, as opposed to one long
game. Well, there's more games than that if you want to count, like, the really mini-games.
Well, yeah, that's true, yes.
Yes.
But there's 8 full-fledged games.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. But, you know, they kind of really thought outside the box with this one, too. The developers did, because, you know, we have the Great Cave Offensive, which is, you know, kind of a Metroid-ish game.
Yeah, it's a fair departure from the standard Kirby formula, because there's exploration and collecting items and such that you didn't have in the other Kirby games. But they also contain two, I think they're like 4-stage adventure, typical Kirby games. The one in particular that I really enjoyed was Revenge of Meta Knight, where you're on the airship bringing it down.
Yeah, I enjoy that one as well. You know, of course, who can forget Samurai Kirby?
Oh, yeah. That's like the Wild Gunman kind of style minigame where you're facing off against Kirby enemies in a duel and just have to hit the button quicker when it says draw. Right.
Well, you know, and it's definitely, you know, it's a very varied, very varied. It's a very varied game.
Yes.
That's appropriate. It definitely there is.
Yeah, I remember when it came out, it kind of threw a curveball because a new Kirby game on Super Nintendo, I wasn't expecting something like this, but it actually is a lot better than, for instance, Kirby Dream Land 3 on Super Nintendo.
Yeah, I have that. It's not very good. I have to agree.
Yeah, compared to this, this is great. This is actually probably my favorite Kirby game when you want to get down.
I definitely agree with that, but
for Virtual Console, it's a great buy because on Super Nintendo, you want to get the cartridge, you're looking at about $40.
Yeah. So, definitely a thumbs up on Kirby Superstar. Okay. King of the Fighters 95.
Oh, I love me some King of Fighters, but not this one.
Not the right year.
No. Yeah. King of Fighters was one of those series that started off pretty slow. I mean, they've had so many iterations and refinements that it took them a couple years to really get the formula down. And I wouldn't really play King of Fighters before King of Fighters 96.
See, I've never really had much experience with King of the Fighters. I always thought it was more of a generic fighting game.
Yeah, I mean, I always had that conception of it, too, until I sat down and played it and realized that actually the characters in it are a lot more varied and different than Street Fighter characters, both in design and gameplay a lot of the time.
Right.
But, like I said, King of Fighters 95, it suffers from that early stiffness of a lot of the 2D fighters where your moves don't always come out the right way and it's kind of hard to combo and things of that sort. It's just, it was a good game for the time, but in retrospect, not really worth playing. Just pick up another King of Fighters. These games have been released on so many collections, so many times, there's a lot better ways to pick up a King of Fighters game than just one Virtual Console release of a subpar installment. So
strong words.
Yeah, I'm a hardcore King of Fighters fan, and I'm not going to play this game.
I can hear the fans just typing up those hate mails again. That's fine. I'm like psychic. I mean, I've got internet.
That's fine.
I've got internet clairvoyance. I can see what's going to happen.
I've got internets. I've got emails. I'm going to make my voice heard.
I have multiple.
Screw you,
emails.
Eric Gerbeck. King of Fighters 95 is the best. Well, you can feel that way if you want, but you'd be wrong.
I like that little impression. You just kind of like stepped into the mind of a troll for half a second.
Yes, I did. It's not that hard,
that's
really.
That's a very special ability.
Yeah, well, if you're worried about trolls, we're going to talk about Mega Man 4 again, which we already kind of lambasted before.
We have to, because, yes, yeah. Mega Man 4 is on the Virtual Console, and I'm not sure if... I know Mega Man 2 is on the Virtual Console.
One, 2, and 3 are definitely all on there.
Oh, I wasn't sure. I was going to say, I'm not sure if 3 is on there.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Mega Man 4, if you don't know much about it, it's mainly known for being the game where the wheels started to fall off the Mega Man franchise.
This is where the horse got put before the cart or something. I don't know. You make a hipster reference.
Of course.
But, yeah, Mega Man 4, it's not a bad game on its own merits, but if you want to examine it within, like, you know, the first 4 games on NES, it's
within the confines of the series. Right. It just doesn't measure up, unfortunately,
when you're talking about a series with, like, 10... Mega Man Classic series is 10 installments at this point. You kind of
It's not 10, it's 8 installments.
Yeah, well, you have to examine those games in that context, and Mega Man 4 is a weaker iteration. It just is.
And it's better than 5.
It's better than 5, yeah. It's better than 6. But it's still not that great compared to 1, 2, 3.
Doesn't quite reach that level of greatness.
But, I mean, we don't need to go endlessly into this subject. No. We've already talked about Mega Man 4.
Yeah,
if you like Mega Man and you've never played it, you'll like it. But, really, I'm sure we've all played this game to death. We don't need to play it again. Mm-hmm. Don't bother with it unless you absolutely have to.
And, you know, of course, it did introduce the Charge Shot, which we all love. We all
and
love Pharaoh the Charge
Man,
Shot.
My favorite robot master.
Well, getting into the main course of the episode.
It's time to get into the freeform poetry slam jam.
The meat and potatoes, if you will. As we said, this is going to be a rather short episode. So this is going to be our final segment, but this is the topic we've really been building up to. Mm-hmm. One that we've been thinking about for a long time, and that is, what is the state of retro gaming today?
What's its place in the modern gaming industry?
Yeah. And you see this all the time now because we, as a demographic, the people who are fans of retro games, are being catered to now more than ever, mm-hmm. I would say. Just because, also, well, you have to think that retro video games hasn't really been a term that's been used for very long.
Right, no, it hasn't. I mean, you know, before, I'd say, the 2000s, I never heard it used before.
No.
And, you know, I just was into emulation. That's what I called it. I didn't really say it was a retro game or anything like that. I just played a lot of emulated games. I didn't have a title for myself or anything like that yet.
But now that video games are over 30 years old, we can actually talk about retro games, just like we talk about retro music or old movies.
Right. And we can be curmudgeonly about it. And really cynical.
Well, is there any other way to appreciate retro games? I don't think so.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're looking back, we've said this many times before probably at this point, but the hazy memories of your childhood and looking at it through the eyes of an adult, it's hard not to be cynical when things don't go exactly the way you want them to. Mm-hmm. So,
And that brings up an interesting topic with retro games. Is the game good? Or are you just nostalgic for it? Because I find sometimes when I play retro games that I haven't played in a long time, that I haven't played as a child, that I just, a lot of the time, I just don't understand it. Or I'm not really, I feel like I can't like it as much as I would if I experienced it as a child.
Yeah, and that's very true. I mean, we talked about it during that Intellivision retrospective that we did. Where, you know, it comes down to, what did you play as a child, mostly?
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you play Intellivision? Did you play Nintendo? Did you play Sega Master System? Your likes and dislikes are going to tend to be based around things like that.
But this isn't always true. I mean, I've played a lot of games that I never played as a child, mainly imports for older systems, and I love them. But I feel like there are definitely, there's a characteristic in people who like retro games where they tend to favor systems and games that they played as children.
Right. And honestly, sometimes I even myself get a little bit cynical talking to retro gamers because sometimes I don't understand why they're making a big deal about a lot of the games there. Because, you know, we talked about the game room earlier. I grew up with Atari and Intellivision, and I will still admit that I really, beyond like a little short, brief fling, 5 to 10 minute fling with a game on one of those systems, I can't sit down and play it for an extensive period of time anymore.
Just because, well, I mean, our tastes have been altered by modern society.
But there are games on those systems that you can still sit down and play for a good 20 minutes and have a lot of fun and be an enjoyable experience for you. Like, you know, Dig Dug, for instance, on Atari is great.
The classics,
obviously. Yeah, I mean, so any classic game like that stands out, but With retro gamers, a lot of the tendency is to go into the more obscure, because we've all played, you know, Super Metroid, for instance, to death. We've played Mega Man to death. So we delve into those more obscure titles that may not be worth unearthing, really, in retrospect.
But, yeah, like we said, it could be just nostalgia that kind of clouds people's judgment.
I think it's a combination of a lot of things, really. Mm. It's nostalgia, it's, you know, pining for an era gone by that you can never return to, and it's also looking at things through rose-colored glasses.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a cliche, but
everyone's, you know, everyone sees their childhood, even if you had a rough childhood, which so many people claim to have had these days. Even if you had, you know, a rough childhood, everyone, I mean, most people look back fondly on their time as children. And, you know, I mean, you see this with older people today. Most older people, senior citizens, prefer movies and music that they grew up with. And this can definitely apply to video games as well. Right. But that brings me to the larger topic, which is the marketing and the pandering to retro gamers. Which we see, this is more of a recent phenomenon. We've had, you know, remakes and ports forever, but now we are seeing games that the producers are taking old games and marketing them today to the current crop of video game connoisseurs. And you also see, you know, just instead of just even a port now we have to update it and up-res it, make it HD, you know, redo the sprites, redo and the texture mapping.
Yeah, and we're also seeing a lot of the problems inherent towards marketing to, you know, this counterculture segment of gamers who really can't even agree amongst themselves on a lot of things.
That's true.
Like, for instance, how old is retro really? Like, are we talking PlayStation era? Are we talking before that? Because we all have differing opinions. Like, for me, for instance, I recognize retro as basically anything before 2000, but the PlayStation era for me is something completely different from the 16-bit and previous eras, and I don't recognize that really as something that I consider retro to myself, but I understand a lot of other people do.
I would say, yeah, for me personally, I think it stops in the 16-bit era. But, yeah, some could even really say that the PS2 is retro.
But we're also dealing with an ongoing history. In another 4 years, I guess PS2 has to be considered.
Well, PlayStation 2 did come out in 2000.
Yeah.
So it's 10 years old.
Yeah, and a lot of those games look their age at this point.
But a lot of the PlayStation 2 games actually look really good, though, still. So it's hard to define. It's subjective, depending on who you're talking to. But yes, retro as a demographic of video game culture is definitely expanding at a rate today that it hasn't been experienced in the past, I would say, 5 to 10 years, where it's actually, you know, become kind of, not necessarily hip, but it's become more of interest to your average everyday gamer.
Because developers around the 3D era and ongoing until, like Drew said, fairly recently, the retro era is more just, like we said before, like primitive cave paintings, and especially Sony, for instance, tried to downplay any kind of 2D experience or anything that brought memories of retro.
For a long time, it was like a cold war among these systems. You know, it was just a race for the best technology. How can we make the most realistic looking polygons? And now it's kind of degraded into more, much like the way art did.
Because,
you know, with art for a long time, the holy grail in art, such as paintings, was achieving realism. And now we've kind of achieved a decent level of realism. It's obviously not going to be totally photorealistic.
Right.
But we've reached such a level where now people are aspiring to be more creative, more aesthetically pleasing than just recreating reality.
Right.
So the state of retro today is definitely something that's interesting to talk about, and we'll obviously see more of this with, you know, like we were saying earlier in the podcast, games like Rocket Knight, games like Bionic Commando Rearm. And we really want to ask the question, is this a good thing or not?
Yeah, it's difficult for me to say. I mean, I like that old franchises are unearthed like Rocket Knight, but when it's done wrong, I just don't really see a point in doing it. Just like the Hollywood remakes and reimaginings.
The Turtles in Time reshelled, which we know.
Why was that necessary? I mean, and it also comes down to, you have to view video games as an art form, because it is an art form.
And, well, some people would argue that
they might, but I would argue to the death that it's an art form, and Sometimes it's not really appropriate to take something that was made with the utmost care and precision, like, say, Phantasy Star on Sega Master System. Mm-hmm. Do we really want ports of that with completely different changed soundtrack? No, I want the old chiptune soundtrack on that game, because it was made to the best of their ability at the time with the best technology, and it's one of the best looking and sounding 8-bit games you could ever play. Well, I don't want it changed. I want it preserved as it is. And that, to me, when I look at these, all the collections that come out now, and all the remakes and everything, I want, what most important to me is that these retro games are preserved for future generations to be played as they should be played.
Right. So yeah, that's one of the major questions is we have all these this repackaging of retro games. Isn't the whole point of retro games really to experience these older games on older systems the way they were meant to be experienced? Not downloading them on the internet, not playing them on your computer, but actually experiencing it the way you would if you were playing it in the time it came out.
Right.
So when you have you know, the Xbox Live Arcade, PSN, releasing updated versions of these games, doesn't it lose some of the aesthetic retro quality that we love them for?
It does. I mean, and that's a perfect way to put it, because when I play, for instance, Turtles Reshelled, that's how I feel about it. And like, all the charm.
It's just a, you know, a old game done up with, you know, fancy bells and whistles, fancy 2.5D graphics.
The gameplay is barely changed, and what is changed is for the worse. It's not as fine-tuned as the
sluggish,
original.
You know, the graphics, it's okay, but we're talking about Dreamcast-level graphics,
I mean,
least.
Yeah, and not only not only is the gameplay worse, but like I said, the graphics, the voices, the music,
the charm is lost. Yeah,
all the charm is removed from the game when you play it that way, and there's really no point in playing it, because why would you want to play, you know, an admittedly very simplistic,
but fun.
Straightforward, yes, but fun, but still simplistic and straightforward game with none of the charm that you remember of it, and it just looks unappealing by today's standards. Why do we want to play a Dreamcast quality game in today's gaming marketplace? There's no place for that. But there is a place for really well done 2D sprites, 2D artwork. Classics can still sell and still be relevant today, in my opinion.
Well, I think the flip side of this, the inverse, is that on the one hand, I think a lot of people would rather play these older titles the way they were meant to be played on the original console, but sometimes it's too expensive to do that.
Yeah, in many cases that's just not feasible, or it's very difficult. And that comes down to another problem. I mean, I can bitch about Microsoft Game Room as I did before, but for instance, in television, I mean, it's very difficult at this point to find a working one that's going to be in good condition and is going to last longer than a couple more years.
So as a means of preservation, this digital content service, definitely, like, that's definitely a quality that I can see for preserving retro games. But on the flip side, it does kind of pervert the original intent.
And, you know, to tie in with what we were talking about earlier and kind of wrap it up here, it comes down to effort. Is there love there? And that's what retro gaming is all about. I mean, the main reason that retro gaming and emulation and all that has persisted, it's complete love of these games. It's all third-party human effort to preserve them. I mean, Nintendo made no effort to release emulators and ROM cartridges, because obviously they wanted to make money. They wanted to release Virtual Console later and make money off of it.
And you could take the cynical approach and say that all these remakes and sequels and everything else that obviously don't have a lot of effort put in them, there are a few shining examples of people who really put a lot of effort into these renditions. Yes. But
for instance, you know, we talked about Bionic Commando Rearmed. It's obvious whoever was involved with that had a lot of love for the original game and put the best effort they could forth.
But the cynical outlook on this is it's just another way for the original developers to squeeze an extra dollar out of you. Look at Capcom. They are notorious for releasing
remakes,
sequels, ad nauseum, very few changes to the core dynamics of gameplay, basically just a facelift on their old games. They are notorious for doing this, and this is where I really see the future of retro games as going. just releasing these old popular games that have a built-in market of retro enthusiasts.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe add some downloadable content, maybe redo the sprites a little bit, make it compatible with HDTVs, blah, 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 and sell it to you for $15.
Right. I think, you know, I don't want to be overly cynical, but I have to be, as usual. Like, Sonic 4, I think, that is going
prime
to be
example.
That is going to be the best example of what we're talking about in a negative way. I feel it's going to be like Rocket Knight, but even worse, because they're charging you for episodic content on it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, back in the day, you'd buy this entire game in one package.
Yeah,
and maybe it'll equal out to be cheaper than it would be back then, but it's still, in my opinion, a very
It's a cynical,
a very underhanded way of making money. And Sonic 4, just everything I see from it, it doesn't look like the effort and the love is there. It's just not there.
Yeah, well, obviously we can take the cynical approach to this. We can view it as another way for video game companies, who, by the way, still make so much money. $60 for a new game.
Right.
You know, I think it's EA is trying to curb the used video game market through GameStops, yes. You know, they're
EA
we're coming almost back to the N64 era where, you know,
EA will always be the boogeyman to me.
But we're coming back to that era where, you know, video games are unneedingly expensive.
Yeah, it really did start with the newest generation of video games. Yeah,
although the used market is still very good.
Yeah.
But the state of retro games, I feel, is kind of becoming, like with any kind of fad or interest, it's becoming commercialized.
Right. But on the flip side, we still have a very thriving retro game community, which I feel is mature enough to recognize these things and thusly purchase appropriately. Don't, like, for instance, Rocket Knight, let the little kids that they're marketing to buy it, and if they make money off it, great. Don't support them by providing them money. I mean, go buy the original Rocket Knight if you really want to play a Rocket Knight game.
The best way to really initiate change and make your opinion heard is with your wallet.
Right. And I mean, that's how these retro games cropped up in the first place. It's all of us making our opinions heard, making sure that MAME, for instance, existed and was able to archive, you know, over how many games, like, that you could never, ever play anywhere else. You'll never find a lot of these games on any collections. Mm. And the only reason they exist is from one sole retro gamer who decided to take his board out of his arcade machine and flash it to be available online.
And that's really what you need. You don't need to spend 1,200 Microsoft points on Rocket Knight or Final Fight Double Impact or any of these other games that are just reinventing a good thing.
And it's kind of funny talking about Capcom, whereas, you know, all the same people now that play Mega Man 10, back in the mid-90s, we were all complaining that Capcom was just overdoing it with these, you know, with all their franchises.
Funny how the tables
have turned. Yeah, but now it turns around that Capcom, because of the fact that they are the best at whoring out and, you know, endlessly remaking their franchises.
Reviving their franchises.
They're the best at these retro, you know, post-retro, as I like to call them.
Neo-retro?
Yes.
New with a U, retro?
Which, you know, might turn out to be a bad thing, as Drew said, if it's just going to go the way of the classic Capcom and everyone takes note of that and does the same thing.
Yeah. But we're still, you know, there's still always the argument that this popularization of retro video games will lead to more people coming to the table, more people who appreciate the games of yore, and maybe in the long run, it'll actually be better for us.
Right. Well, what I hope happens, I just want to close it out by saying what I really hope happens is more in the way of what I was saying earlier, preserving all of these old games that nobody can play anymore or are very difficult to play. I'm not really as interested in a Rocket Knight reimagining as I am interested in making sure the original Rocket Knight can be played by people.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as companies are doing that, I'm happy. But right now, like we said with the game room and other things, a lot of these companies aren't making a good effort towards that. They're sort of ignoring their old things and just giving lip service to certain things, like Rocket Knight.
It should all be about preservation and accessibility.
Let's spread the love around, okay? Please, Mega Man reimagining is great, but I would much rather have, like, for instance, It's the Pulse Man. How about a Pulse Man reimagining? Yeah. No one's ever played that. I mean, compared to Mega Man anyway. So yeah. Well, I would like to see them digging a little deeper.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, they're like with many things that many perversions of culture, I guess you could say, commercialization of culture.
It's not like
there's always a silver
lining.
Yeah, we've seen this with everything, you know, music, movies, fashion.
Right.
So there's always a chance that it will work out for the better. Right. And let's admit, it is good to actually be catered to every now and then.
Right.
Even if it is through shitty downloadable content and 3D versions of 2D games that should never be made.
But don't let it sedate you, and don't view everything through the hazy mist of nostalgia. I know that sounds strange coming from Pixel Dreams, but
Professor Grubeck throwing a curveball.
Right. Man. That's one of our messages, or at least one of my messages here, is don't look at everything as being good just because it's old, but try to look at it through proper context.
Right. And that about does it for this return episode of Pixel Dreams. Pixel Dreams reshelled.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to mention,
after this, we'll be back to sprites and everything that you love.
16-bit soundboards. Yeah.
Yeah, no more reshelled after this. Hopefully.
No more HD. Just SD. All right, well. Anyway, we also would like to announce that we are going to be on a the anniversary episode, actually, of Press Pause Radio, which is a podcast that we appreciate, and they had us on for, actually, I think it was an hour-long segment. Mm-hmm. That's about what we recorded
hour-ish.
For. So
it was more of a grab bag of random topics.
Yeah, it was
relating to old stuff.
Definitely freeform. But yeah, please check that out. We'll actually probably post the edited version of that soon. But until next time,
keep it retro.